Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, Terp fans? Fred and Ryan back on the mics. It's been a hot minute for me. Probably going to be a little rusty, so bear with me through this thing. But I'm excited. If you're a fan of the Terps, you should be excited. Terps now, man. 3-0 on the season after a 42-14 win over the ACC rival Virginia.
And I'm just like you guys. I'm here sitting listening to Fred's sultry tones back here.
Oh,
not
get
having
out of
to,
here.
Not having to listen to myself talk for an hour. You guys are in for a real treat. A little less Terps BS bird in this show.
It's fun, man. It's been hectic, man. It's been, three games in 13 days? Unreal. Between
one less day than we give up points.
Yeah. Between that and the Ravens tailgates and the Terps tailgates, man, it has been a hectic couple of weeks. But let me tell you, if you are a DMV sports fan right now, you are loving life. The Orioles are in the playoffs. The
number
Ravens,
one team in the AL.
Right. The Ravens are undefeated. The Commanders won their Super Bowl when they got the new owner, but they're 2-0 to start the year too. The Terps are 3-0. Things are looking real damn good in the DMV.
Yeah, the AFC North's falling apart around the Ravens, so we're gonna just win by proxy.
Right. Well, let's talk about this this past Friday night, man, as the Stars were out in attendance for this Terp game. It wasn't just you, me, and the fam. Tank Davis was out there. Torrey Smith and Zay Flowers from the Ravens were out there. Bunch of big recruits from the DMV area. I saw Ryan Howerton, Malik Washington, Jalen Gilchrist, and a bunch of others. It was a lot of people in the house, and, man, it was a I'll say this. It was a little disappointing at first because you know how we are as Terp fans. We don't like to get there early, apparently. We don't like to get there even on time. No, yeah, we like to get there about midway through the first quarter.
The students like to get there on time. Like, not even early, still even with them. But, like, yeah, the students, great. Give it up for the students.
Kudos to the students.
They have actually done really well through all three games, especially well through the Virginia game. But yeah, even they make you nervous every time. They're a little bit early. And there's like, we filled out 1.5 sections. And I'm like, but there's always that steady stream. Like they are pouring in at before kickoff. And the other side of the field, our home field behind the home sidelines, the giant Terrapin Club, it was looking a little sparse, and they were trickling in slowly until probably halfway through the first quarter. They probably didn't even know we give up 14 points for the hell of it.
They probably two weeks in a row, they didn't realize that.
They keep thinking they're the reason we're turning it around. We just show up on time, see if we don't give up that 14.
Right, exactly. But, man, you couldn't ask for a better night. I mean, the weather was beautiful. The atmosphere was good. They finally got the sound system for the most part dialed in and everything. I know that was one of our complaints last year. The sound system sounds good. I love the new lighting. That's going to take some work in when to use it and how to use it, that kind of thing. They're kind of working through the kinks with that, but I love the new lights. The atmosphere, the blackout jerseys, which we always get a little nervous about blackouts. They don't usually go very well for us.
Going so well.
No, we do not have a good track record with especially primetime blackouts, but we end up winning this game 42-14. Now, I will say, to me, this score, 42-14, I think overall is a little misleading from what this game really was. and it started early, man. Virginia kind of threw us for a loop as Tony Musket was the talk heading into the game as a starter at quarterback. And they end up running the freshman, Anthony Collin. What was his name?
Collander.
Yeah, whatever.
That guy. We're going to have to play him again, unfortunately.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
not going to be great because he does look really good for a freshman.
Yeah, for the first half, he played great. He actually has a similar style to Talia in the sense that he's not a very big quarterback. He likes to roll out of the pocket and make plays with his feet and throw the ball on the move down the field.
Slinger, he threw some deep balls pretty consistently.
Yeah, he played with confidence. He threw with accuracy in the first half before the wheels fell off late in that game. But man, I think you and I switched emotional roles
100%
week to week in this. Yeah, last week you were doom and gloom after they got behind 14-0 to Charlotte.
I was broken.
Yeah. This week I was doom and gloom because the way I saw this was you had to learn. You had to learn from last week. And the last thing that you wanted to do was come out and do the same thing, especially it was almost identical in the sense that there was this blown coverage for a big pass play, except for this one didn't end at a touchdown until a couple plays later.
Yeah, it might as well end at a touchdown.
But yeah, it's disappointing. You know, this is Virginia, who's, I would think, is a much better team than Charlotte. So when you're down 14-0 to a team like Virginia, who's an ACC rival from the past, you want to punch them in the fucking mouth. Well, here you are down 14-0. I wasn't feeling great about it.
No, you were definitely not feeling great about it. For some reason, I had zero fear. I was disappointed, like you said, especially in that deep pass, because it was literally the exact same thing. Like, yeah. Okay, it was a flea flicker, which makes it slightly different, but it was... Again, Shepard jumping on a route he didn't need to jump on. He needs to learn that this is not what this defense is. This is like a bend, don't break, do your job. You don't need to be the standout jumping every route's interception guy on every play. Do right. your job. Your job is to cover the guy that 2 weeks in a row has made you look stupid on the first drive of the game.
Agreed.
It's if they can't get it through his head after watching the exact same film side to side, I literally hope Locks took a split screen and played the two plays at the same time and showed him his same number of steps, his same result of breaking in on the somewhere he didn't belong, and what the result should have been, because it should have been a touchdown. It was underthrown by the freshman, or that 6 points right there, and it's literally all of us in our head in our laps going, is this a replay?
Yeah, it literally felt like Groundhog Day yeah. over and over again.
I think when I looked back at it, though, what had me different on this, what had me not worried as much, I believe, was the difference in the sideline. I mean, you saw what Charlotte's sideline was with Anoma yeah. and with, you know,
the this guys was their that, Super Bowl.
Yeah, with the guys that were coming back for the Terps, even... the lineman that transferred, they're playing D-line for him. He was offensive line for
Fontaine.
Us. Fontaine.
Yeah.
Like, just to see them right in front of us, boisterous, loud, in the face. They had so many more fans. Charlotte packed out that stadium because, not packed out, but was heavily represented in our section.
They had a bigger following than Virginia, who's 100% an hour, who's bigger an hour away.
It was probably 400 to 500% the number of Virginia fans that were there because... They all went to St. Francis, so they all yeah. have family here. And so there was just surrounded by that. They're all, you know, chirping back at the few Maryland fans in there, which is us. And right. so I got in my head with that and knowing the talent of people like Anoma. So, and what you do, what we've always said on here, if you give a bad team hope, bad things can happen. And that's kind of what it felt like then. Virginia didn't really seem to believe even when they were scoring it, like,
at least they were
really calm about it. Maybe they were just so businesslike, just like, I'm doing my job right now.
Did you not watch the quarterback? That freshman's out there dancing behind the line, having a good time, bobbing his head. I mean, he looked like he was in a groove, man. I think he was what, 11 for 13, his first 13 pass attempts. I mean, this kid was firing on all cylinders, and there was nothing that could have stopped in that first half.
Yes and no. I mean, again, I think more of it was the sideline that I was talking about on that one. But yes, the quarterback was very animated. In fact, to the point where even my wife was like, I can't take this guy seriously. Like, why is he like in? Why is he in this like giant wide receiver's face? Like, you know, he's like he looks like a 12-year-old. Like, and I'm like, yeah, it's just what it
She's
is.
Not far off. He's 18.
What are you gonna do when you're 18 years old and your teammates are 25-year-old men because they have COVID years? Like, you're trying to lead a team because you're the quarterback. But they're 6 years older than you. Like, it's a rough spot to be in, and he did a great job with it.
Right. No, I totally agree. I totally agree. So, a little bit of disappointment, obviously, especially on the defensive end. Yeah, again, you get punched in the mouth right away. You're down 14-0. But, you know, as an offense, how do you respond, right? And early on, they had a promising first drive that kind of stalled once they got into scoring position. They ended up going for a 55-yard field goal attempt that Howell took and just missed wide right. But it was special teams that pumped life back into the squad with freshman Braden Wislowski.
Here comes Wislowski. Wislowski to the edge. What kind of speed do you got, young man? There he goes. He's got enough gas in the tank. It's a touchdown for Maryland. That's how you turn it around.
Braden Wislowski. If you said you knew that was going to be the star of this game, I call you a liar. I mean, the only person I ever heard say his name was John Googs, and I was like, who? I think we were talking about kick return options, and he said that his name was like, he's a Swiss Army knife kind of player. They're not really sure where he's going to play on the field. And I'm like, we have so many wide receivers and running backs. Why would we be digging that far deep into the closet to get somebody I don't even know the name of? Well, right. Keep on digging, Locks. I trust you.
And it was the exact moment that the team needed a spark, man. Again, down 14-0, a 98-yard kick return. That's when everything kind of changed. You saw that the sideline get pumped up. They injected some energy into them. And for me, this was really good to see for multiple reasons because – like you said, I mean, kind of going into this year, I didn't really know what to think of this special teams unit as a whole, right? You lose and all might as well be an All-American kicker in Chad Ryland, right? And Howes, you don't really know a whole lot about how he's going to be. And it's, the first game against Towson started off a little rough, but he's gotten better and he's definitely got the leg. I mean, the kid can kick from 55 and make that no problem. It's just, the accuracy was a little off on that kick. But one of the positions that I didn't really think there was going to be a whole lot of question marks around was on the return side of things. I thought Octavian Smith was going to be that standout kid. I didn't know how much of an impact he would have at wide receiver because we're so deep at wide receiver. We have so many targets. But where I thought he would shine and be that breakout player of the year would be in the return game. And last week he had a couple muffs, made me start thinking like, I don't know who's another option. I really don't want to see our top flight wide receivers out there and have another Dante Dimas type situation. I'd rather it be somebody that is kind of their specialty role. And it's good to see a kid like Wislowski make an impact right away.
Yeah, I mean, Octavian Smith even kind of met that further this year where we were seeing him on these drag routes, the sure-handedness, the absolute, I was literally sitting there like, this kid's going to be an absolute monster. So right. then you're ready and you're willing, wanting to see him for what we thought he was going to be in the kick return. But the Towson game, like you said, was just over and over again, just head scratchers. Just like, why is catching that type of ball so different for you? I know right. It's one of the hardest things in all of football is to field a punt, especially a kickoff is also very difficult. But it's just kind of crazy when you see that it really is a specialty. But Wislowski, let's not rule him out from being a star receiver down the road because he had the longest kickoff return for a freshman since our boy, was it Torrey Smith or Stephon Diggs? I can't remember which one it was. It was one of the absolute studs of our history. I can't remember which one. I believe it was Stephon Diggs, but longest return for a freshman since one of the absolute greats in Maryland. So he could certainly crack this place eventually. I think he's a little buried on the wide receiver chart right now. But if we can actually have a threat back there, it helps. It really helps.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that wide receiver core. Cause that was obviously a lot of changeover. A lot of guys moved on, went on to their NFL careers and are chasing their NFL careers still currently. But we had a lot of, incoming transfers. Obviously Chambers hasn't really gotten going with the squad yet. He's had some injuries he's been battling through. He got a little bit of work, had a big third down catch in this game. Caden Prather, he was the big catch coming in from West Virginia. He's made a big impact. Ahmed had made reference to him being that kind of Dante Dimas replacement or that Dante Dimas type impact. And I think so far he's had that kind of impact. It's one of the parts of Leah's game that I thought was missing last year was having that down the field threat, that jump ball kind of receiver, the throw it up and get it kind of guy from the wide receiver standpoint. And I think Caden Prather has been that and more so far through three games.
Yeah, he's been developing in front of us. I think he's been good throughout the whole time. And I also see that unlike some of the players, I have not seen him make the same mistake twice. We saw the interception in front of him that I was critical of where he didn't become the defender on the ball. I saw a couple episodes of that where he really kind of decided, well, I have to run him out of this play or I have to play defensive back, basically, once you know you're not getting the ball. So there was those things. I haven't seen any more of his crocodile arms that he had on the first down play at what was that, Charlotte, in the early goings. So it really seems that he is developing. Again, we talked about that push-off call is complete garbage. His stats should be a million times better than they even are. So I think he is one of the biggest catches. Kudos to Ahmed for seeing how big that was going to be, because I wasn't so sure. It just, every year we think we have the best transfers in the world, and so you just kind of start getting apprehensive on it. Like, well, last year we thought we had studs across the board and it went okay. So right. Are we just going to be okay again? But I think he is currently playing better than basically anybody we had last year. And
yeah.
It's weird. Like, that's a weird statement, because we thought we were absolutely loaded at the beginning of last year.
No, I agree. And again, he brings that down the field threat that we just didn't seem to have last year. It wasn't that I don't think that any of the guys could have done it. Dante was not Dante. He was not himself, right? And I think Rack was more that underneath the cross, the post kind of guy. He wasn't really the deep threat. But it's nice having a guy like that. It's nice also having a safety blanket in Jayshon Jones, who's still heavily involved in this offense, and you're seeing him kind of take on that leadership role as obviously the fifth year senior at this point. He still has a little
leadership,
Jayshon,
with the absolute diva edge. This man, it's so funny. Whenever we think it's behind him, it pops back out.
I know.
Luckily, there have been no yellow hankies on his side this year. But every once, he's one of those guys that just makes you smile and shake your head. Like, you look around, no flag, and then you're like, it was entertaining.
Right.
But as soon as that flag comes out, like, you're going to be villain number one again.
Right. Exactly. And then when you look beyond Jayshon, obviously Leah has been very comfortable throwing the ball to Corey Dyches. He's been the main target at tight end. And I know going into this year, we were a little worried about the tight end group, obviously losing a big piece, in CJ Dupree, losing some depth in a Weston Wolf. You had some question marks at tight end. I know we had a bunch of guys. Laron Husbands was a name that was thrown out. We got Preston Howard, who was a quarterback who was put in. Rico Walker's the big tight end, or the freshman get that they got when we didn't quite land the Harbor that we thought we were going to get. There were some question marks going into that tight end group. But I tell you, Corey Dyches has stepped up and played really big for the Terps through three games.
Yeah, I mean, I just saw a stat today. He's like leading all of FBS, or leading the Power Five in tight end yardage. Just kind of unbelievable to have that kind of season. I remember actually when we did the like hot takes, you were talking before the season that you said that he was going to be the wide receiver leader in tight ends or the wide receiver leader for our team. I don't even remember.
I'm not sure.
I think, but it was definitely looks possible. We'll have to go back and check the tape on that one.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he has been as advertised. The blocking is not all that. It's not what he is. There's two different types of tight ends now. The game has developed. He will put a block on some people, but he's not the big body that we were used to. Do I think we would be even better if we did not lose a CJ Dupree? Sure, but we have absolutely the guys to replace him. And the future is still bright in that tight end room. It's kind of like when we had Chig on for the interview, and we were kind of shocked at how, like, positively he glowed about what he was leaving behind in the tight end room, and we were like, really, like, is it really stacked like that? And then the next day next year we had Dupree and Dyches,
right?
So it's like, yeah, Dupree leaves, well, you have Dyches and Husbands. Like, it's kind of crazy. It really shows that grass isn't always greener type stuff.
I was just about to say, how's it working out for him? He's got, what, two catches for like 50 yards, I think, right now, and Alabama's losing football games. So everything that we thought, like, hey, go chase a title, I get it, go chase a ring, that kind of thing, not working out so hot for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's Alabama. It's a different experience. I don't blame the guy for his decision, but yeah, I do wonder if there's a little bit of buyer's remorse now, or if not now, if they lose a third or fourth game, because it looks possible. God, I don't know how I would have said that any other year, that Alabama could lose three or four games, but I don't know if the shine's gone. I don't know if the NIL money makes it more even. I don't know if Saban's outward conversation about the NIL money not being his favorite thing has rubbed some people the wrong way, or if it's just random chance.
No,
I don't know.
I personally think it comes down to the single most important position in all of sports. It's the quarterback position. They don't have that stud that's ready to play right now at quarterback. They got a couple of guys. They got good quarterback play, but they don't have that elite level top five team quarterback play. And I think that's what's hurting them. I think they've got studs all around on that roster, five stars everywhere you can possibly look. But at quarterback, that's the big question.
But Alabama with me at quarterback should be USF better than 17-3.
I agree with that.
I mean, look at the running back rooms they've had over the years. Like they should just be able to never throw the ball and win 35-0.
You would think, but that just goes to show how important the quarterback position is, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
But let's switch to the other side of the ball. Let's talk defense, man, because going into this Virginia game, I was a little worried about the secondary because obviously Bo Braid was out for this game. Glendon Miller, though, I got to give him a shout out and credit, man, came in and played a great game, made a huge hit. I mean, he didn't play a perfect game, but to come in and have to play on short notice, I think he played very well.
Yeah, I mean, Bo Braid's great, but Glendon, having him missing is more of a hit to our depth because Glendon Miller plays a ton every game, no matter what, in that situation. They're definitely a rotational type piece in that secondary, and he plays huge. I mean, the guy is long, the guy is fast, and he's all over the field. Bo Braid, I think, hits just a minute harder, but there were some big slams in that one, too, that he caught some people not looking. But it's just, I don't know what it is. Bo Braid feels like that, like, just hammer. Like, that's what he's there for.
Right.
My father was turned around in the game and was like, I need a safety in the box every play. I'm like, Dad, but that guy's not playing. Bo Braid's not here right now, so we got to try with what we have.
Right. Well, he did a great job. You know, they had Gavin Gibson out there who also played really well in this game. It's just, you know, it's that bend but don't break mentality. They got down by 14 early, and they could have panicked, and it could have gotten worse, and it could have spiraled, but that was it. They gave up those 14 points, and they really put the clamps down. You know, it took the offense a little while to get going, but because we headed into the fourth quarter, 21-14, it was still a football game going into that fourth quarter. But when you talk about the secondary and how much they stepped up in this game, they made three interceptions on three consecutive pass plays. That's crazy. That's crazy.
It is absolutely crazy. I believe that has got to be the first time since the Boston College game where I rushed the field, the back-to-back-to-back interceptions.
Yeah, I can't imagine that happens very often.
The no more Heisman chance did not come out for the freshman because he was not Matt Ryan. But but it's got to be the last time that that's happened. The change, the two changes were in the game. The beginning of the game, both on offense and defense, of everybody just kind of looking lost, like turning to the sidelines after like within seconds of the ball snapping every time, late adjustments, tons of communication, and like sometimes not getting the communication right. Like I remember wide receivers literally being like, I don't know where I'm supposed to be, like throwing their hands out in the air.
There's a lot
like,
of that.
Like, and they're snapping the ball. And so I'm just like, what is happening? You were the same way. Yeah. And on defense, it was the same thing. And then the defense, like you said, put the clamps down, slowed everything down, no scores until that middle of the fourth quarter, early fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden it was, we dominate this squad. Like we are owning this game. It was all about the defense. It's very interesting to see the development. Yes, do I think that the freshman just got forced, realized he's run out of time, had to try to make a big
There's
play?
There's definitely a part of that.
You know, that's part of it. But I will say to you, Fred, nobody gives us credit for being down 7 points to Penn State going into the fourth quarter when we got beat by 20. So I'm not going to give Virginia any credit when we decide to put up 20 points in the fourth
quarter.
Hell no. So I don't want to discount this 42-14 win. It's what the score was.
These weren't like terrible throws that, you know, the guy panicked into and made
these
bad
weren't the backup
throws.
Quarterback either.
These were two jumped routes by Tarheeb Still, who's one of the best corners in the conference. You know, I think Mike Locke hit on this before too. Tarheeb kind of gets lost in the fold of all the other guys that were here when he was a freshman. I mean, you had Nick Cross out there, you had, you know, Deontay Banks, you've had Ja'Corian Bennett, you've had all these guys in the secondary that kind of took the shine away a little bit from Tarheeb Still, but he's been the constant through his entire career there, and he's now the guy. He's the guy that's left from that squad. And he's still a guy. I mean, they put him out there as far as like feeling out his NFL potential, like as far as draft potential last year. He wasn't happy with where he thought he would go, so he came back. But this kid is still a damn good corner, and he proved it in this game, jumping both of those throws.
He's the guy we thought was going to be our number one last year, yep. And then two got drafted. Like that freshman year was so amazing that we were just waiting for that next step. I think he took the next step, but it was just hidden. Like you said, there were just other dudes that were more developed, older in their careers, and just kind of like, he'd also had, Locks talked about injuries last year. He was banged up, missed a couple games, but also played just hobbled in others because he's still the best at 80%.
Right.
So right now, he looks like a healthy version of himself, and he's showing out. And it's what we needed because we lost two NFL caliber corners. You have to take a step up. You bring in one in the portal, and then you hope you find a third somewhere else that can be even 80% of what still has been the last couple years.
Exactly. So you got, again, so it wasn't the quarterback completely falling apart. I think it was an element to it, but you got Tarheeb making two hell of a plays. Donnell Brown with the
two games in a row.
The extension and then the concentration to stay with
it. Bobble it three times.
Yeah.
Laying on his turtle shell, just rotating on his back, catching that ball in his lap.
So again, I mean, we can go ahead and say and blame it on the quarterback and all that stuff, but I'm going to give the credit to the defense, man. The defense made three really, really impressive plays. They end up with four turnovers in whole in that fourth quarter. But man, I don't know, looking at this defense now, right? Because there was a lot of change over the year. Again, a lot of guys leaving, a lot of guys coming in, some transfers and whatnot. How do you feel about this defense as a unit through 3 weeks?
I think the defensive backs are as good up front as we thought they were. I think that the linebacker core, the top end might not be as good as I thought it was, but they're just so deep. We have like six or seven guys that are as good as I thought our third or fourth would be. And so later in the game, they're still fresh. They're playing guys like that on other teams just wouldn't be played. The Sean Greeleys of the world, the guys that just, you know, have been walk-ons and put in their time and done the due diligence and have put in work, but they don't look like a step back really.
No.
Like they're maybe a half step, but when they're at 100% in the fourth quarter and your starter's at 80, like they're the same player. It really seems like that's what we're going to survive on. I wish I saw more out of my boy Ruben, one of my favorite players coming in. I wish I saw a little bit more out of Barham already. He's in a couple spurts, but overall the room is solid, stone cold solid. I just don't see the spark yet, the explosion player.
I couldn't agree more with your analysis, especially on the linebackers. Like I would have hoped we would have saw another step in growth with Ruben and with Barham. I'm not disappointed with them because they're
still very good,
above average, solid players,
better than we've had for years. They're not the all American players we thought they could be.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. The step behind them, the depth behind them has made leaps and bounds, which if we do have to sustain an injury, because you know it's inevitable, it happens every year, I feel a lot more confident about our depth now, 3 weeks into the year, than I did heading into the season, which is good. The question I have with the defense so far, again, we're playing smaller offensive lines. I haven't been really blown away with the pass rush. And that
Finaje Gote showed up this week, though, for the first time in a while.
I'm not saying it's been non-existent. Yeah. I expected the pass rush to be on another level through these three games and then come down a notch once we get into Big Ten. So they've kind of underperformed in my eyes so far, and then getting into Big Ten, that worries me a little bit because you just don't want to give these guys too much time. I mean, you want to get back there and disrupt their rhythm as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, you saw no turnovers forced versus Towson, and I was really worried about it.
Exactly.
And then the last 2 weeks, they've really turned that key. So hopefully we still have another step to go on the pass rush in the same way, because we have seen shots, and we've seen shots from different people. Isaac Bunyan has been a guy out of nowhere that we weren't really sure was going to be as productive as he is. Like I said, Barham's had some plays. Finaje Gote resurrected from the dead to come, you know, get some pass rush. He's been here as long as Deshaun Jones. We don't look at it the same way, but they've been here together forever. Like,
right.
So he's over there putting in work. Grown man. You know, 6 years into college football. So hopefully that continues to grow. Hopefully you can stay healthy in those positions and keep the pressure on through these bigger, better lines.
I agree.
Do think, though, like you're saying, with the defensive line and the pass rush, we are going to look back and the biggest loss in the offseason, we were focused on Dupree. We were focused on Mason Lumford. The biggest loss is going to end up being Booker to Arkansas. I do think that having a big ass body like his in the center of that defensive line right now would really change a lot of what's going on.
I agree.
It's a one that hurts. And it's one based on, you know, just casual interactions with dad, this and the other, that I think was just, you know, an NIL play that, like, no hard feelings, you know, liked my time here, but it's time to get mine.
Right.
And so that one hurts because I think that he could be taking this team to a whole nother level.
Well, let's talk more macro level of the entire team as a whole as we head into conference play now. We go in this week on the road to Michigan State. How do you feel about the team? Are you confident? I mean, again, you got a team that's gone off to slow starts, 14-0 deficits twice. Now they've overcome them, but 14-0 deficits twice now, back-to-back weeks, heading into conference play. Are you nervous with this? I mean, does it make you wonder where things stand as where rankings in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, I think, but I'm nervous because I'm starting to become overconfident. I think that's a weird place to be as a Terps fan when you start looking down the schedule and you can't find a lot of L's. Like, I just look around, I'm like, yeah, we could or should win, like, a lot. I mean, the big three are always going to be a question, but, like, I can almost come up with arguments for all of them at this point. I'm not going to predict a run in the table, but I can come up with a scenario for everybody. I honestly was starting to believe that Penn State was untouchable, but the last game, their quarterback showed has moments of, like, lapse, and that we could end up with three interceptions on three passes like we just did in Virginia and change a game. Their defense is absolutely stunted. We're not putting up a lot of points, but could we win a 12-9 game versus Penn State? Maybe. Or we could get absolutely killed. Either one of those things could happen in my head. So, like, I'm almost more nervous that, like, I'm starting to think my shit don't stink. Like, this could actually happen. Like, this.
Well, you're definitely on another level confidence wise than I am, because I've been trying to rack my brain about these starts. I mean, it's one thing to give up 14 points 2 weeks in a row, but then pretty much both weeks to clamp down defensively after that and look like a totally different team. It boggles my mind as to how you can be so night and day, so black and white different, you know, in a matter of minutes. But I think Mike Locksley,
I'm blaming the fans.
Maybe that's part of it. I think Mike Locksley did a really good job of addressing what he believes that issue is from.
One of the things that, you know, as I went back and evaluated, so the past 2 weeks, and I'll get into, I'll bore you guys, but, you know, we track our guys in terms of the analytics of their player loads. And for the last couple of weeks, because we had two straight games, we had a Saturday late game and a Friday early game, we had to cut some things out of practice. And when we cut out of practices, we cut our good on good out. And when you go good on good, that's where you really get the speed of what a game is like. And one of the things that, you know, the last 2 weeks I've cut practice down, where I've removed the good on good, but we continue to do the stuff versus our development team or developmental team. And what happens, the developmental team doesn't always finish. They don't always get off blocks. They kind of go through the motion, and sometimes they become, you know, we call them scout dummies, where they just stand there and it's, I blocked you, and they stop. Well, what happens is, and what I kind of think is my philosophy is that what's happened to us is that we don't adjust to the speed of it until, you know, we get punched in the mouth after the first quarter, and now we understand it. And so what I've done is I've reinstituted the good-on-good periods in our practice where we'll get the speed of what it looks like or should look like. And then, again, we have to make the point of emphasis that the guys that are on that developmental squad to wear those black jerseys, it's important. Their role is to get us ready to play fast. And we've got talented players over there, but they just have to learn how to be a good scout player for us to give us the look that we're going to need. And so I'm hoping getting back to getting the speed of it in practice allows us to not have that adjustment, because we haven't been a team in the past that have started out slow. We've traditionally on offense been a fast start team, and then defensively we've given up some yards, but we've given up some explosive plays off of, you know, some of what I call trick type plays, you know, the flea flicker. And you can expect those early in people's scripts against us, because we've given up those plays. And once you put it on tape, people will continue to attack. So, to me, I think us going back to getting the good-on-good periods back in our practice hopefully will give us the speed that we need to be able to start fast and not have that adjustment period, I hope.
So I think Mike's got a point here. This is something I hadn't really thought of and obviously didn't know until I heard this. But if he really did call off these good on good sessions a couple of weeks ago, where I think this can actually make an impact is, if you think about it, right, there is this whole mantra to you play down to your competition type of thing, right? And we see it year in and year out with the Terps. We see it year in and year out at professional level. Teams, as dominant as they are, tend to play down to their level of competition, right? So if all week you are practicing against practice squad guys, you know, like the bottom level, your fours and your fives all week long, then you don't know, like, that changes the game speed for you. And then I think that's what they're used to. So it's a psychological thing. You come out and you're so used to, okay, for this entire week, I've been practicing against one thing, and we get punched in the mouth right out of the gate with one speed. Then, yeah, I think that can have an impact. And I think correcting that is real easy. You just go back to your one-on-one, your goods versus goods sessions, and hopefully that does make a change.
You remember when we had the section with Ellis McKinney, real talk versus coach speak?
I do.
Coach speak. This is great coach speak. I'm glad he told the team that this is why, that he figured it out, that he's a mastermind, and he knows exactly why we're moving slow, and that we fixed it. It's fine. Everything's going to be good now. But I call bullshit. I mean, our backups are better than the starters at Towson. Our backups are as good as the starters at Charlotte. I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think that if I were to, I don't know that I know what it is, but if I'm going to put my thumb on something, we've talked about what that stadium looked like as they run out the tunnel. If you are an 18 to 24 year old kid that is pumped up on testosterone, losing your mind, hyped up from a pregame speech, you're walking down the tunnel, there's music blasting, there's lights going off, and you enter the dome through this, or the dome, enter through the shell, and you see a sea of bleachers. You don't tell me there's a letdown. You don't tell me there's a adrenaline dive. You don't tell me that takes something. You watch it. They go running out of the shell, and if there aren't enough students there, they don't make it to the end. They just tail off and go to the sidelines.
That hasn't been the case this year. There have been students there. That's been 90% of the stadium is students.
But still, you watch in the Charlotte game, they dove off in that before they ever got there, because it was only two sections, and the people that were in the student section were behind the barrier that's there at the end. They weren't up in the corner because they hadn't filled out where the band was. The only thing that was there was the band and the high school band. There was no other students on the far right side by us because it was empty. Towson, you know, the students were pretty good, and they stayed, you know, long enough. But like it at, again, they're coming in at till kickoff. Well, the coming into the tunnel is 15 minutes before kickoff. I'm not down on the students at all for their game time performance. They've done great. I'm not backtracking on that. But again, there is arriving late there, and there's a lot of arriving late everywhere else in the stadium, including our section and definitely in the Terrapin Club section. So when you come out to a sea of bleachers, I just got to think there's a letdown. And then you realize it doesn't matter. The fans don't matter. We need to win this game. It's for us and our Terp fam. And they fucking click in. And that's just an opinion. But I think it makes more sense than it's good versus goods, because sure, is it a little bit, you know, better practice, but you know what an NFL practice is. It's nothing. Like, there's nothing happening in NFL practice. It looks like warm-ups for any rec league.
You're talking NFL versus college. There's totally different levels. I mean, you're talking about ones at a college level going against mostly walk-ons and guys that really are just filling out your roster. NFL rep, if you're on an NFL roster, you're the cream of the crop. You're one of the best. Yes, there's a difference between your practice squad and your second and third string and all that. I get that. But it's not the levels of difference, I think, at the collegiate level is totally different than at the pro level. As far as your comment with the coming out to the students and it being a letdown, there probably is some to that. But I would see that more as if they were used to it and then didn't have it. They've never had it. So it's not like it's a letdown, like, oh, last week we had this great crowd, and then all of a sudden, they've just never had it. So I get
there was a big step back from Towson to Charlotte. Again, weather-wise, it's understandable, but there was a huge step back. And the players probably didn't even know there was lightning and raining the whole time, because they're in beautiful Jones Hill House the whole time. We're getting shit-canned in the parking lot.
Right. I don't know. I mean, again, I think there's truth to both sides of it. I don't think it's just one simple answer. But nonetheless, it still has me nervous heading into Big Ten play. Now, this week, obviously, they're going into Michigan State, who right now they're dealing with a lot of shit with Mel Tucker being fired for phone sex, sexting, whatever the fuck he was doing over there. Who the hell knows? Now they're a week removed from that. You know, that last year kind of, you know, the news broke and all that stuff, and they look like total shit last week. They're a week removed from that. And we've seen this story before with teams like this that have gone through controversy, right? They use the adversity to kind of rally together and play with a purpose type thing. This is not going to be an easy game. It's real easy for you to say, oh, well, that whole organization is an array right now. It's a mess, blah, 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 blah. I don't believe that. I'm not going to go into
that whole school's been a shit show for a decade. The athletic director that still has his job is just mind blowing at this point.
Yeah.
How many times are we going to settle these sexual issues across every department? Nothing to do up there at East Lansing, I guess.
From the details that I heard, I personally don't think the guy did anything wrong. I think they were looking to get out of a contract, and that's what happened. That's my opinion on it, but whatever. It is what it is. Guys have done much worse and kept their jobs. Lord knows.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you know, Ohio State with Urban Meyer has been in much worse situation than this. It's like, it is what it is. But things get buried when they want to get buried. I do think there is something to the fact that no matter how wrong he was, if he was winning 10 games a year, it would have disappeared somehow. I will go that far. No matter what a coach was doing, if they're winning 10 games a year, it just magically goes away.
Yeah. Well, like I said, they're dealing with a lot, but I think this is going to be one of those rally the troops kind of situations. And to be honest with you, they still are a formidable team. I mean, when you look at what they have, especially defensively, I mean, they get after it. They create some of the most pressure in the Big Ten right now. They have the most sacks in the Big Ten right now. They're very, very solid on third down defense. So this is going to be our first real test for the offense, I think, defensively, because this is going to be, again, a team that's going to create pressure, that's going to get after Leah. And yes, Leah's had a little bit of pressure he had to deal with. Last week, we saw the first in three games. This is where I think Leah has grown. The first in three games where he had one of those terrible, let's scramble back 40 yards. He cut it back up. I think it was a total loss of like 16 yards.
Took a weird sack,
Yeah, that was the first time we've seen that. And we used to see that at least once or twice a game from Leah. That was just kind of who he was, and it was one of the most frustrating things about his game. It's where I think he's actually developed. But a team like Michigan State who can get after it, that's what worries me, is him kind of reverting back into old habits.
Yeah, it could very well be. It is a Big Ten environment. We haven't had that yet. They obviously had a huge game against Washington last week where they got absolutely boat raced. But, you know, number 8 team in the country is going to do that to a lot of people. Best thing we can say is that that quarterback left Indiana and we will not have to play him next week. So that is a big win for the Terps, is that he is sitting over there in Washington.
Right, and that's true.
But offensively, they're also really a problem child. Like, we've looked at their wide receivers are huge. Everybody's over 6 foot across the board. They're not quite as deep as us. It looks like they have more of like a 3-4 man rotation than our 5-7 that we roll out there. But they are big and seem to be pretty dependable at that first three.
Yeah, and obviously this is going to be a test for the corners because, again, like you said, everyone is 6'1 or above. So we'll see. We'll see how the corners – I mean, the secondary has played really well so far this year. And then they obviously have a true bell cow at running back in Nathan Carter. He's averaging 5 yards of carry. Really nobody behind him that, you know, we've got this whole three-headed monster kind of thing going with Littleton and Hemby and McDonald, which has been a surprise. I'll be honest with you. McDonald has gotten more play than I thought he would get so far, especially through the first 3 weeks, but I've been very pleasantly surprised.
I think he's number two. I think Littleton is falling down that depth chart.
Yeah, he hasn't been as impressive in short yarded situations as I'd hoped he would be. I mean, he's that 235-pound back. I know he's lost weight, but he's 235 is our biggest back by far. You would think that he'd be able to get you that extra yard or two, especially in those goal line situations or those fourth and ones. And early on in the year, they weren't using him, which tells me that, A, the team doesn't trust him in those situations. They were using these sneaks with Billy and doing weird things without Antoine. Last week, they finally put him in some of those short yardage situations. He did get the one touchdown, so he did get through, but he was stopped on a couple plays as well.
Yeah, we also saw some creative stuff in short yards we didn't mention. There was a linebacker playing fullback. There were different things, which is good, because we that was losing Dupree, losing Weston Wolf, losing the guy that went to Charlotte, the fullback, Burns.
Oh, Burns,
like,
yep.
Like, these guys were dominant in those short yardage packages. Like, I never worried about a fourth and one. Like, we had so many options to just move people, and so we did need to get creative on that, and I'm glad that they've looked at all options. Obviously, if you're bringing in a linebacker to play fullback, you've realized that you needed something,
right?
Yeah.
Well, let's put some predictions out there. Let's see. I want to talk, one, obviously, how you feel about this game. How do you see it shaking out? And then, two, I mean, we're at the quarter point of the year. I want to take a look at where we see this team as of right now potentially shaking out for our chase at a bowl game.
Okay. I look at their schedule. They played two nobodies and then Washington. They're 41-7 against Washington. That's the only place I can really judge off us. I know we're not the number 8 team in the country, but we're certainly closer to them than the Spiders and whoever the hell this C thing is. I don't even know who they're playing. like these aren't real teams. Like, even less than what, you know, the Charlotte was, you know.
Right.
So I think that they'll score, hopefully not 14 in the first quarter. I can tell you they will throw probably a flea flicker and definitely a couple pump fakes at Shepherd on the first drive. So we should definitely not let that happen again.
Right.
If it happens again, I might cry. if we don't let them score on the first drive, I might high five everyone in the room. I'm going to go, we hold them to 13.
Okay.
And I think we can put up 28.
Okay.
28-13. Yep.
All right.
And they won't break twice and have one F up.
I'm worried, as I said, about Leah going into this game with the pass rush that Michigan State has, with some of the question marks that we have at offensive line, some of the rotations that we're still going through on the offensive line. I will say they played better. They definitely played a decent game against Virginia. But Michigan State's another animal. So I don't think the passing game is going to be as effective as we've seen recently this game. Like, this is one of those like 200 to 250 yard games for Leah. I think we're going to lean heavy on the run game. We're going to see a lot of Hemby. I think we're going to see a lot of McDonald in this game. I think defensively we can hang with them. No problem. Their offense doesn't scare me. Yes, their size is intimidating, but outside of that, I don't really see that being a huge challenge offensively. I've got this being a lower scoring game. I like the Terps to win it 20-17. I think it's going to be a close game and a lower scoring game.
20-17.
Yep, Terps win 20-17.
I do want to touch on that offensive line thing a bit. So we know our transfer from Frostburg didn't play the first two games.
Yep.
The third game, he's expected to be our left tackle, but he's playing over there at guard. It does, from people I'm talking to, sound like it was more of his own limitations of not being able to be out there on the island to get that far step, still kind of working back from those injuries that put him at guard. Sounds like he is still the Fagan replacement. Whether that is this week, whether that is 2 weeks from now, his goal is still left tackle. Right tackle. gotcha. Because left tackle is Delmar Glaze. So yeah, the right guard position where he played last week is a stepping stone to replacing Fagan on the outside. Love the work Fagan's getting for the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
But yeah, it will be helpful if they're right and if he is still developing into something to get that going. So just a thing that I had touched on about people I've talked to around the neighborhood and things. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, let's kind of, like I said, we're at that quarter point of the year. Terps again, clean sweep in the non-conference games, 3-0. I feel like this is like, again, another deja vu, another Groundhog Day moment. You know, this is where we are pretty much every year since Loxley's been here and since Lee has been here. 3-0 after conference play. So we've won all the games we're supposed to win. Heading into conference play.
One was an ACC team, okay? Whether it was a good one or not. Whether there are any good ACC teams. Are there good ACC teams?
I don't think that those two words go together at this point. But again, 3-0. No matter who. You play the opponents that are thrown in front of you. We're 3-0. I'm not real high on the Big Ten as a conference this year. I mean, listen, I understand Ohio State's the sixth ranked team, Penn State's seventh, and I think Michigan is second or third, right? So there's three teams in the top 10. I haven't been sold on what I've seen from Ohio State. I think they're a good team. They're not Ohio State that we've seen in years past. Penn
State play, like you said.
Yeah. Penn State, they've got a quarterback finally that can make some noise. I know he didn't look great this past week. He didn't look great.
Yeah.
But like you said, they're built like a hoss defensively.
Yeah.
So they're not going to give up a whole lot of points. Michigan is Michigan. They're going to be the constant every year. They're going, you know, they've still got Corum is one of the best running backs in
Corum coming back. Like, come on. Like, what do we have to do to get what did you have left to prove? I cannot. That just shows you what like NFL running backs are just making nothing and just terrified for their, like, there was nothing left for him to prove. He was not going to put anything on tape this year that would have made his draft stock go up, but he can collect the money here just as easy as collect the money there.
Running back's one of those positions that the earlier you can get in the NFL and save that wear and tear on your body, the better, because the life expectancy in an NFL for a running back NFL career is only 3 years anyway, right? So like it's super, super short. You don't want to shorten that by extending out another year in college when you had high, you know, pedigree for the NFL draft last year. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either.
Who knows? He's been here forever. God, we might be in bad luck. Maybe he still has a COVID year. I mean, somebody heard talking about Talia's still allowed to come back again if he wanted to.
I didn't think they could after this year. I didn't think COVID year was a thing after this year. I could be wrong. Anyway,
not looking forward to him.
I think, again, my goal going into this year was 8 wins and then 9 with the bowl, right? That's
what we do. We win bowl games.
Right. Let's get to that. So we did it 2 years ago. We got the 6 and got the 7. Last year, we got 7, went to 8. This year, my goal was 8 and to do 9. I'm looking at the schedule right now and watching some of these teams play. And again, it's early in the year, so some of these teams are going to get better as the year goes on. I don't really see any reason that we can't handle all of our business against the teams unranked in the conference. So you've got Michigan State this week. You've got Indiana next week, Illinois, Northwestern, Nebraska, and Rutgers. That is all the teams that you're playing that are currently unranked. There's not a single one of them that makes me scared. Not that we can't beat them. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I think that I'd be at 75% on a win on all of them and higher on most. I think Nebraska is probably the one that scares me the most in Lincoln. But
right.
Yeah, it's, at this point, if they are what we think they are, they're all winnable and should be wins.
So if you win those games, you win all the unranked games, you're at 9 wins.
Yeah.
You're 1 win against one of the Blue Bloods that we said this year we wanted to see them, like they kept with the Blue Bloods last year.
Yep.
We wanted to see them take down a Blue Blood this year. If they win the games they're supposed to win and they just win one, we're talking about a 10-win team before the bowl.
That's a New Year's Six bowl when you're in the Big East and winning 10 games.
Unreal. I mean, I'm not, again, not saying any given Friday, any given Saturday.
I think what the more, honestly, the more realistic scenario here is we do slip up on one of those, but then grab one of the top three and end up with a 9-win season that's better than if we just took care of business and lost to the top three.
Right.
I don't know why, but it just feels like that's just how college football works. You never just take care of business across the board.
The good news is
the Monsters.
The good news is against the Monsters this year, two of those three are at home. You've got one against Penn State at home and one against Michigan at home. Neither
and
one of those.
I think our best chance is at the Horseshoe. I don't know why. Blake Corum scares the piss out of me. Penn State, we can only win in Happy Valley. I just, the Horseshoe without a quarterback, their best player is a wide receiver. So what does that do for you without a quarterback? And the fact that they won't actually believe we're good yet because we won't have played anyone. I just think that's our, like, if you can jump on somebody, you want to talk about freaking somebody out, getting a 14-17 point lead in the first quarter and changing what that Horseshoe sounds and looks like.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm drooling over. I mean, it's first, so I just have to anyway, but
I mean, you're right.
I hope it's the one.
You're right. I mean, Leah beat Penn State in Happy Valley. Yep. He kept with Michigan until the final minute. And until, you know, obviously
with three bullshit interceptions and a real fumble off the kick, the very opening kick, like Talia beat Michigan. We let them off the hook. Like that was, we played way better and lost better.
I agree. I don't know. I, again, to me, still, even with the way that we're feeling right now, as confident as we are, 8 wins, I'm still happy. Am I a little disappointed that we lost to somebody we shouldn't have lost to? Because that's what that means.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see who that is. But again, looking at all this unranked schedule, nothing scares me. There's not a single team that I don't think that we can beat. And like I said, I'm hoping we can take down one of these Blue Bloods and win 10 games this year. It would be a hell of a ride. It would be a hell of a season.
If it's number 2 Michigan inside the shell, that's amazing. I see it less likely than the other opportunity, but I'm not going to say we can't do if we get boat raced by Ohio State. Like you said, it's any given Saturday and they're different styles of play. I mean, even going back to the Michigan game even further, they went for 3 fourth-and-ones where they could have kicked a field goal or punted the ball either one of those times, and they just kept scoring 30-yard touchdowns on them.
Right.
That doesn't happen. You could play that game 100 times, and that doesn't happen again.
Right.
Maybe there's just so much like frothing hatred for what happened at Michigan last year that it doesn't matter how much better they are than us, that there's just unbelievable amount of motivation for them to win that game. So sure, you just talked me to another one. We got 11 wins, Fred. 11 wins. 11 wins.
Oh man, here you go.
I'm don't glad you're set back. That kind I, can of go, expectation. I can go full Homer now that you're back.
Well, what say you guys, man? Why don't you follow us on social media if you're not already? Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Shell and Tell. You can follow Ryan at Terps BSbert. Follow me at Fred BLBS. Let us know your thoughts. How are you feeling about the Terps team? 3-0. Where do you see this team shaking out for the year? How do you see them this week against Michigan State? I'm excited, just as I always am at this point of the year. 3-0 heading into conference play, Ryan. This is fun times to be a Terp fan.
Absolutely fun time to be a Terps fan. Good time to be in the Big Ten. For all you haters still out there, let's revisit this one more time. Maryland versus the ACC since we left. Now 4-1. The one loss was the very first time we played an ACC team when we were still sucking like an ACC team. And we played against Boston College in a bowl game. In that 4-1, we are a +113 point differential, 205-92. This program is in a better situation financially. They're in a better situation athletically. Hell, they're in a better situation academically. Give it up. Get out there. Support these players, because if you don't, you're going to regret it. It's on the way up. Terps up. Terp fam. Get out there to the shell. Till next time, guys. Here's the wishing. All is well under the shell.